Accession number 22342, Reel 5.
Trooper Bowdler, Reel 5. You were saying that the 75 was an accurate weapon.
Yes. To TNA it, you did it. It was very easy to do. What you used to do was put crosswires along across the barrel of the gun, and the front end had four marks on it, and they were dead accurate. You know, they'd been made.
Quartered it.
Quartered when the gun was made. So you'd put two crosswires across there, either spider's webs or bits of cotton or something like that, stuck on with grease. And then you'd take the firing pin out of the breech, squint through the firing pin, and line it up with the target. Little hole, crosswires, target. And you were on. That was it. And then you would adjust the telescopic sight to agree with what you saw through the
gun itself,
through the pinhole. Yeah.
And what sort of range would you do it then?
As long a bigger range as you could possibly find.
That would minimise the error, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would minimise any error. The farther away the target was, although of course when you're talking about extremes, it's you've got the trajectory of the shot to think
it's
about.
It's not a flat trajectory, is it, with a 75?
No.
What about the 37? Was that a good weapon?
Yes, that was a good weapon. Not very often used, I must say.
Did you have HEN smoke rounds with that as well as AP?
No, you had a separate smoke discharge unit on the outside of the turret. It was like a mortar pointing in various ways, and you load it with these shells, and it was electrically fired from the power. And that could send, you know, sort of four or five smoke shells out to take care of it.
When did you first go into action then? You talked about doing a lot of intensive training.
Yes, from this camp at Coconada, which was south of Calcutta.
Yes.
Which is where we did all our training. We were taken to Calcutta, shipped over one. We had to work very hard on waterproofing our tanks to start. That was part of the crew job. So we were dished out with some gunge and some tape, and all the seams and holes in the tank had to be covered with this gunge and tape and then greased over again to make them waterproof. And in some cases we had extensions to the exhaust.
Why was that? Were you planning to do river crossings or
no,
something of that
sort?
No,
we were tending to land on a beach. So we were all shipped onto boats from Calcutta to make our way to just south of Cox Bazar, which was in the Arakan. We didn't know it at the time. But
didn't know where you were going?
No. And a clue where we were going.
What sort of ship were you on from Calcutta?
What, the name of the ship? They were American craft, a landing ship, specially made for landing tanks on the beach.
Landing ship tank, yes.
Yeah, so it had an enormous ramp at the front. And that was it, and all these tanks were stuck down below. But on that trip, I volunteered for anti-aircraft service. And that's where I became a little disenchanted with one aspect of our training which had never been done properly, and that was anti-aircraft training, which was quite surprising, really. We were never taught how to tackle an aircraft. It's an entirely different technique from any other form of firing.
How does it differ? What are the essential...
Well, aiming off. If you can see... I've learnt this later. If you can see the top side of an aircraft, you can see the top side of an aircraft, then you fire underneath it. Because it will run into the the fire. Mm. If you can see the underside of the aircraft, you aim above it. for the same reason. Mm. And left and right too, the same rules apply. You aim off by that amount. And you don't necessarily aim at the aircraft itself, which is where all these people went wrong. Go wrong. I went wrong myself. In the box, we were dive bombed, and it's lived in my memory ever since. I saw this plane. Well, there were half a dozen Zeros came down over the box, peeled off, and came down one after the other in a almost vertical dive. And I was in the turret of the tank with the Browning, and I fired right at the damn thing. I could see the pilot's face through the propeller, very close, and I didn't hit it. I completely missed it, for the simple reason that I didn't aim right, you know. I fired at the plane instead of where it was going.
You should have been leading it then, rather than...
I should have been leading it, yeah. I could see the top quite clearly. Mm. And everybody else did the same thing. We did get one of them, but I think that was more by luck than judgment. Mm. So, as I say, that was one aspect of our training which was non-existent.
When you were going down the river from Calcutta, what sort of anti-aircraft weapon did the ship have?
It had machine guns. Mm. There were 300s. I think it had some pom-poms on. Mm. But they weren't handled by us, they were handled by the crew. Mm. But they called for volunteers for anti-aircraft duty, and I very quickly volunteered because I had my own little space up there, and it was... I got a good view of what was going on and the sea and all the rest of it. It was a good place to be, really. Mm. And you could go up there, and there wasn't a lot of air activity about, so...
Did you see any friendly aircraft?
Friendly aircraft, yes. Yes. Mm. Yes, they were going over fairly frequently, mainly American bombers doing dive bombing and that sort of thing on various features in the Arakan. Mm. But, we were on this thing for, I can't remember the length of time, I think it wasn't long, I think a day and... probably a couple of days and a night, as I recall it. And the first impression I got was absolute luxury, because it was American. Mm. The feeding on board was out of this world. We'd never seen anything like it. There was coffee on tap, and it really was first rate.
How did you get on with the Americans themselves?
Quite well, yes. They were quite good. Blokes on the whole. We got on quite well with them. They had the edge over us. I mean, we were using American equipment. Our own equipment was just not available. Mm. It was all American. And we felt a little under the thumb, you know. Mm. Especially as we were in a theatre where Britain had been dominant. You know, for so many years, we rather felt it. Mm. But it was life on that landing craft was pretty good. And we arrived offshore in the early hours of the morning and waited until just before dawn. And they went in close, and all we could see was a beach with jungle at the back of it. Nothing, no buildings, nothing. Down went the ramps when they grounded. Down went the ramps.
How far offshore were you when the ramps went down? Didn't you have an idea of the distance, the shoreline?
Yes, I would say probably about, 1,000 yards at the maximum. Mm. Down went the ramps, and you went off into the water. And the water would be about 4 or 5 feet deep.
So the gunner would be, driver would be below water level, presumably.
No, you had your head out of the hatch.
You were driving on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I got the idea you were being a loader at that stage, or...
Sorry, yes, I was a loader at that stage. You're dead right, yes. Yeah.
But the driver was high enough up.
Yes, he could see. Well, yeah. The water nearly lapped up to the hatch. And, of course, one or two of them had difficulties, because although the thing had been surveyed, the beach had been surveyed, there were dips and hollows in it which could take you below level. So some of them got a soaking, and water did get in. But on the whole, they all landed safely. Mm. And
had you done any practice in driving through water before you got on the LST?
No.
You hadn't? No. So you'd done the waterproofing, but you hadn't actually been...
We'd never practiced going off the landing ground.
You'd never rehearsed a beach landing.
No. Mm. Never practiced going off the landing ground. Anyway, we were told to head for a light on shore.
Mm.
Somebody on shore with a torch.
Wow, what time of day was this?
Just before dawn.
So it was first light then?
First light, yes. We didn't want the Japs to know we were coming, because our tanks were a bit of a secret weapon. I think they thought that Burma wasn't a suitable place to tank warfare, and they didn't have many tanks of their own there. And the only tanks we'd ever had there was the Valentine, which had proved a bit of a disaster, really. Why, I really couldn't tell you. But they had some unhappy experiences with Valentine. Mm. In the end, the only Valentines that we had were bridging tanks.
Yes.
They were very good bridging tanks. And we did use them an awful lot, because, you know, the getting around was a problem. There were all these dried up waterbeds that had left. They were deeply cut by monsoon rain, so the banks would be sheer, and there'd be tree trunks and branches in the way.
Mm.
And you couldn't aim a tank at the bank and go up it. You had to bridge it or blow or dynamite the bank.
To create ramps?
To create a ramp, yeah. Mm.
Sounds like they were a very serious obstacle to movement of any kind.
Yeah, any kind of vehicle. Yeah.
How wide would those be, those...
The channels?
Those water channels, yeah.
Yes, they varied in width from, you know, sort of a few feet to a few yards, you know. I mean, they would be, some of them would be the width of this room.
Mm. How deep would they go?
Oh, very deep. They would go down six, seven feet.
That would certainly be enough. It would be a very effective anti-tank ditch.
Oh, yes, just like an anti-tank
natural
ditch.
Natural anti-tank ditch.
Yeah.
So you went ashore from the LST and... your tank had been proofed for wading.
Yes.
And your tank, that was effective.
Yes.
You didn't get any water
in it. No water in my tank.
Yeah.
And it was getting dawn by this time. You could just about see where you were going.
Yes.
Where we were going was up a track in the jungle. Mm. And it was dense, virgin jungle. It was virgin jungle.
Had you seen virgin jungle before?
Never, no.
Mm. So you... What sort of jungle had you been trained in at Calcutta then? Was it?
We went down to the Mysore jungles in southern India for that training, jungle warfare training. One jungle is very much like another, tell you the truth. It's jungle trees and bushes, with cleared spaces in between.
Mm.
So, really, it wasn't greatly different.
Mm.
Some of the trees were very big and ancient.
What, in the Arakan, yes. Yeah.
And it really was an experience. As I say, it was virgin jungle. Nobody lived there. There were no roads. There were no facilities at all.
Mm.
It was just wild. Apart from the beach that we landed on, quite a lot of it was swamp.
Yes.
And there were these narrow tracks that had been created through the jungle by an advance party that had gone up.
Ah.
And they had sort of bulldozed a way through and laid logs where the ground was all marshy. Mm. So they laid logs down there. And we drove into the jungle, and each individually pushed away and backed into the jungle to create a little hidey hole for ourselves.
Ah. And how far inland did you go then? How far off the beach would you go?
Oh, not far. Just out of sight of the beach. Probably, what, quarter of a mile, something like that.
Were you laid out in a sort of leader position, or were you just deployed on a random basis?
By squadron.
So
C squadron would be allocated a certain area, B squadron, A squadron, and so on.
And each tank in its own little nest, as it were.
Yeah, troops would be kept together.
Ah, right. So you've got the troop and squadron.
Yes. So, and from then on, everything was on that basis. You know, there was a clearly defined position in the structure. And it was really quite effective. We had some surprises in that landing spot. We got visited by wild elephants. They came right through the camp, leaving enormous piles of dung all over the place. We got visited by baboons screaming through the tops of the trees. I remember one tree that looked dead, and it was a huge tree. It was dead. One push and over it went. It was a hollow shell. It had been eaten alive, eaten from the inside by white ants, termites, and it just collapsed. The snakes abounded. They were all over the place.
Had you been given training about snakes?
Not specifically, no.
How did you treat them?
With caution. We kept well clear of them. We had I had a lovely view of a cobra sitting on top of a fallen tree outside what we termed as the cookhouse. The cookhouse wasn't a house at all. It was just a fire, a stove. Made of sand and petrol. You know, they had a can of sand and poured petrol on it. In fact, our cook got very, very badly burned. He thought the thing had gone out, and he poured more petrol on, and up it went.
Yes.
And that did for him. But we were all waiting in a queue to get served a bowl of gruel at this thing, and somebody noticed this snake, and it reared its head. And I remember somebody, I don't know who it was, drew his pistol and shot it, and it must have been a lucky shot, because it blew its head off.
How far away was it?
Oh, quite close, about as far as that bench.
Oh, yeah, so that's very close indeed. It's a few feet, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's a few feet away, about just 10 feet away. Yeah,
that's all. But, killed it on the spot. Marvellous. And another incident, a child, bloke tried to hang his camouflage netting, and you hung it from trees over the tank.
Yes.
Took hold of a branch and tried to tie it. It was a snake's tail. It was hanging from this tree. And he dropped it pretty quick, I can tell you.
Did you suffer any casualties from snake bite?
No. No, we suffered no casualties from snake bite. The main problems we got, and you did get them in that jungle, were dysentery and jaundice. They're the two main ones. No, not many of our chaps went down with malaria either, because we had a strict regime of keeping going with the old Mepocrine tablets, you know, and the salt water routine. So medically we were taken pretty good care of. But dysentery was a very serious threat, very serious indeed. It affected so much of the, you know, my little incident of losing my place in the queue was quite common, quite a common occurrence. In fact, that's the way I got back into the crew, into the driving position.
Yes,
was because the driver got dysentery and had to go away. So that was our chief medical problem, really.
How long were you in this area of hides then? In
we were in it. We were in it for about a month, I would say.
What were you doing while you were there? Were you just sitting there waiting, or were you doing anything?
No, we were sitting there waiting. And generally sort of, I think things were going on behind the scenes.
Yes.
In other words, there were recce being made, reconnaissances being made further up front. And eventually, after, say, about a month, we were given the gathered together and told what we were going to do. C squadron was going to go in first, We were going to attack a hill feature called Tortoise, which was on the coastal strip of the Arakan, just west of a mountain range called the Mayu Range. And it was a hill shaped like a tortoise, just a
tortoise's back.
Covered in jungle, and absolutely riddled with bunkers, and it stood astride the road to a village called Boothadong, which was a rather an important place in the scheme of things because it was a supply centre. You could get to it by river and road. From the coast. So it was the main supply centre for the Japanese. And we wanted it because our main supply centre was back at Cox's Bazar, way back.
How far were you from the objective in your hides? What sort of approach march did you have to make?
Oh, only about a mile. Mm. Yeah. And in fact, we were covered in our advance up to the target by aircraft deliberately going over to drown the noise of our tank. So we moved up at first light, you know.
Were you on your own, or did you have any infantry with you?
Yes, we had our good friends, the Bombay Grenadiers, crouched along behind us, you know.
When had you teamed up with them?
Oh, they were with us all the time, right from Galanchi onwards. Yes, they had their own camp alongside us at Galanchi. We never sort of got mixed socially, but in action, somehow we were very close. You know, they did a good job for us. They kept the Japs off our backs.
Did you normally have the same subunit with your troop? Was it a platoon to troop relationship?
I didn't know that. I was unaware of that. I rather assumed that we did. Because that would be a logical way of doing the job, you know. In other words, saying to a platoon of infantry, this is your responsibility. This troop of tanks is your responsibility. And therefore, maintain close contact.
When you were going forward into action, did the infantry ride on the tanks? Or were they?
No. They trooped along behind. And there was a telephone on the back of the tank, which the infantry commander could use and contact the commander of the tank.
Was that...
and say, I've spotted a target, or this, that, or the other, you know.
Did that telephone work, usually?
Oh, yes.
Presumably, though, that meant you had to move at infantry pace, so you'd have to be going along at about 2.5 miles.
There was little else you could do anyway, because of the ground. You know, it was so rough and rugged. As I say, the places where... The good old Valentine bridging tank was an absolute boon, you know.
Did you have any artillery support for the attack on Tortoise?
Yes. The whole thing starting up with air and artillery. They tried to take this feature on a number of occasions, but it's very stubbornly held because they riddled this hill, the Japs. They were great diggers. And they dug... On the front of it, where facing us, they had dug into it with slit trenches, and then from the slit trenches, tunnels went back into the hill and out the other side of the hill. So that they could, once firing started on their positions, or bombing or shelling, they could withdraw to the other side of the hill, and then when the firing stopped, they knew that an attack was coming in, an infantry attack, they'd dash back up. And they were back in place to repel. They'd just roll grenades down on top of the poor old infantry that were coming up. So, you know, all the attempts so far to take Tortoise had failed miserably. So what they intended to do was use the tanks to get in close to the hill.
What's the idea that the tanks would provide heavy firepower to shoot the infantry in? Was that the idea?
The idea was, it was a technique that we perfected on Tortoise.
Yes.
That we open fire with our 37mm gun at the bottom of the hill on selected targets. We try and target them. And as I say, first of all, the bombers went in and dive bombed the thing, and that was sort of indiscriminate, really. Mm. In fact, one load of bombs landed on us. Uh-huh. Unfortunately.
Did you suffer any? Did you lose any tanks?
Yes, there was a couple of guys killed and two tanks knocked out, as I recall it, out of a squadron, which is a serious loss. So early in the battle, you know. Anyway, once the bombers had gone home, they were American. The artillery opened up from behind us, and we could hear their shells going over and landing, and that was pretty accurate. But again, it wasn't aimed at a specific target. It was just drenching the hill with fire.
It's an area weapon.
Sorry?
It's an area weapon.
Yes, that's right, area weapon. And target shooting was our responsibility.
Yes.
We were supposed to get in close so that we could see the bunkers, or we would set fire to the jungle or something like that and burn it off, or whatever means we could to identify the...
How close did you have to get before you could actually spot and identify a bunker? Lots of...
Well, the commander did that, of course.
Yes.
Binoculars. And a reasonable distance, I suppose. From the look of it, from my point of view, it it was about... about a quarter of a mile, say.
Were you driving at that time, or were you still
loading? No, I was still a loader.
Yeah.
So
it's about 400, 500 yards, then.
Yes.
You're thinking about.
Yes, that would be about right.
Yeah.
And during the bombing and the shelling, the infantry would move up.
Mm.
Poor old infantry. And we'd see them go in front of the tanks to the foot of the hill.
Yes.
And crouch down there. And then on the command, we would lift our fire.
Mm.
The infantry, and they had somebody in conspicuous clothing,
yeah,
a flag or something like that, so that he could be seen, and you knew what level the infantry were at.
Oh.
And you would lift your fire, and they would move up under your fire.
Mm.
And that went on until you got to the top, and just before reaching the top, you changed over from HE to armour-piercing, so that you didn't have explosives worrying our own infantry. But it would keep the bunkers quiet, hopefully. But even that didn't work. The jokers went out the back, and as I say, the moment the firing stopped and the infantry made a dash for the summit, they were overwhelmed.
The Japanese came back, did they?
Yeah, the Japanese came back.
Did you actually see any Japanese?
Yes, oh yeah. You could see them quite clearly. Yeah. We took out a couple of guns. We saw the wheels and the barrel go flying through the air on one occasion. And on other occasions, we put shots straight through the slit of a bunker, you know.
Yes. What was best for that? Was that the 37 or would that be the 75 be best?
75.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
What were the bunkers constructed of?
Oh, they were marvellous things. They were wonderfully made. They looked so secure. They were timber and sandbags. And cut into these hills, these jungle hills, they seemed to be of sort of soft bred earth. No rock, apparently. And they could dig into them, and they were phenomenal diggers, the Japs were. They really were. I mean, they would take a position, and within a matter of hours they would have been dug in, and it'd been very difficult to take. Anyway, that was our baptism of fire for the... We got fired at. We got bombed. We got shelled.
You got bombed by your own side. Did you get bombed by the enemy?
No, there were no aircraft about at that time.
What sort of shells were they firing at you?
They were firing at
us.
Mostly 47s.
So they had some anti-tank guns on the hill?
I have no reason to suspect they had anti-tank. I didn't think they knew tanks were coming. I think they were totally surprised.
There's conventional artillery that was coming back.
Yes, conventional artillery, But their main weapon was the mortar. They had prodigious amounts of mortars and ammunition. And it was a very effective weapon. I mean, a mortar could easily disable a tank.
How would it do that?
Well, they come straight down on top of the tank.